Tonight on the Daily Debrief, sentencing for the man convicted of killing his...
Okay, folks, welcome to the Debrief. We're going to head straight to Iowa tonight, where a judge today sentenced Zachary Keene to prison. A jury convicted Keene of both first-degree murder and child endangerment in the death of his infant son. We're going to take a look back at the verdict from early November, if we can.
State of Iowa versus Zachary Keene, verdict form, count one, we the jury find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree. Count two, we the jury find the defendant guilty of child endangerment causing the death of a child.
That was the victim. The victim, the infant Sterling Keene. First responders found his rotten body inside the Keene home. Here's a look back at some of their disturbing testimony from the case.
So say I do.
The prosecution called witness after witness to testify about arriving at the Keene home and finding little Sterling dead.
His eyes were open and he was a blank stare.
Nurse Tony Friedrich was there early.
His arm was cold and stiff, and he had what appeared to be blood around his, on the side of his mouth. My assessment is this is not a baby who I can do CPR on.
You raise your right hand.
Chief Deputy Reed Paulo struggled to make sense of it.
You can see every rib. Really small.
His assessment continued.
There was feces and urine that had been straining through the diaper for a long time.
Deputy Jason Rosel said air fresheners had been deployed to cover up this.
The first thing that I could smell was human urine. When I got closer to baby, I could smell, I guess the only way to describe it is death.
Medical investigator Jeremy McGrath said the little boy was covered in blankets that became wet with decomposition.
Was there anything else unusual that you saw around the child?
I noticed flies and gnats.
Prosecutors estimate that Sterling Keene was left for between 9 and 14 days before his parents finally called for help.
Malnutrition, dehydration, infection caused by diaper rash. That's what caused this child's death. And ladies and gentlemen, the evidence will show that this defendant, the father of that child, is responsible for that death.
Life in prison without parole is the final sentence for Zachary Keene. He made no statement, and other relatives of the dead child did not attend the sentencing hearing. Our guest tonight on this case is law enforcement expert and Law and Crime host Vincent Hill. Vincent, it's very rare that we're across the table together.
That's right, Aaron. Good to see you.
All right. A sad conclusion, though, to a very sad case here.
Absolutely. I mean, life in prison. When you think about little baby Sterling, at 4 months old, most babies are just now beginning to hold their heads up on their own. But this young little toddler was left in a seat with maggots across his body. Now, of course, Zachary here said it was the mother's responsibility. But babies are the most innocent and helpless people on this planet. So it was his responsibility just as much as it was hers, and I don't know why he even used that as a defense.
You know, we listened to the words of the first responders in this case, and they were very heartbreaking. You're a former police officer. Did those words resonate with you, and how so?
Absolutely. I can remember one of my very first cases when I was out in East Nashville was a 2-month-old that had died of SIDS. And when I walked into the apartment and I saw that little baby in that crib, that's an image I will never, ever forget. There's one thing to see an adult that was killed over some bad blood between another adult, but when you see a helpless baby in a crib dead like that, that's something these first responders will never forget.
Do you think the first responders saw this as a just sentence?
I think so. I mean, life in prison, what else could the outcome have been in this other than life in prison?
That's what the law mandated. Vincent, we're going to check in with you again here with the next case. Now to the case of an alleged cop cover-up in Chicago. This all surrounds what happened in this video, which you've seen many times here on Law and Crime, showing Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke shooting and killing a knife-wielding teenager named Laquan McDonald. One jury convicted Officer Van Dyke of second-degree murder, But now three other officers are on trial. The three men are accused of conspiracy, official misconduct, and obstruction of justice. Prosecutors say they lied in their official reports by claiming Laquan McDonald attacked the officer who shot him. Detective Marsh, who you see there, claims prosecutors are finding fault by taking his words out of context. Walsh claims his reports match his perception that night, but that his perception was wrong. Gaffney and some of the others blamed Laquan McDonald for ignoring officer commands. Defense attorneys argued that the judge should dismiss the cases because the state failed to present enough evidence for a conviction. These arguments are part of every criminal trial before the defense picks up the case, if it so chooses. Here's how the arguments began as to defendant David March.
At the beginning of this trial, I told you that David March is an innocent man, not just because he's presumed innocent, because he was actually innocent. And after sitting here during this trial and watching these witnesses testify and listening to what I have to say, it is extremely clear that David March is an actually innocent man. This innocent man sits before you today charged with three specific crimes: conspiracy, obstruction of justice, and official misconduct. The evidence is lacking so much in this case regarding all three of these charges. I submit to your honor that as a matter of law, you must direct this case out. Find David March not guilty at this juncture. And I'm not clear, Your Honor, whether your standard of review at this juncture in a bench trial after the state has rested is that you're going to view the state's evidence in a light most favorable to them, or are you judging their evidence that they presented beyond a reasonable doubt? Regardless of what your standard of review is here, I submit you must direct this case out regarding David March. That's how lacking of the state's evidence is in this particular case.
Okay, so from there, the argument got heated. The attorney for David March argues that March did not attempt to hide the video of the shooting.
David March inventoried the video in this case. He saved this video for these people to use against him. How in God's name is David March conspiring to conceal the true facts when he's saving the video for the world to see now? That's not the act of a co-conspirator with the intent to shield Jason Van Dyke from an investigation and prosecution. And by the way, he just didn't inventory the video of 813 Robert, which everybody clings to as the absolute truth. He also inventoried 845 Robert's video. He and another detective inventoried videos from Dunkin' Donuts. He's preserving evidence in this case. It's important to Mr. Maris to collect and save and preserve information. It was important to David March that night and every day following to preserve the evidence in this particular case. He was at the scene that night, and according to the police reports, which the state introduced into evidence, you know, Your Honor, that David March was overseeing the collection of evidence done by the evidence technicians that night. All 16 shell casings were picked up by evidence technicians under the supervision of David March. If he was conspiring to conceal the true facts, how about him picking up about 7 or 8 shell casings and putting them in his pocket? How about taking that video from 813 Robert and throwing it in the middle of Lake Michigan? It is shameful that David March, an innocent man, is sitting here charged with these crimes when he gave all the evidence to these prosecutors.
And the attorney for David March fought back about accusations that March used the word lunged to describe the actions of the shooting victim.
Nowhere in David March's reports does he use the word lunge. No witness who David March interviewed and documented on a general progress report said the word lunge. Lunge didn't come from David March, nor anybody he talked to. You know who it came from? A media person named Pat Camden, who worked for Chicago FOP, not the Chicago Police Department. There's no checks and balances for the media.
An attorney for one of the other defendants, Joe Walsh, was more subdued.
Joe Walsh was just trauma on October 20th that night, and he completed two fill-in-the-blank reports, which were vetted by three levels of supervisors, and he went home. He went home, and he returned to work the next day, the day after, in the 8th District, where he had been for about 16 years, the same district where he lived with his wife and his family. The huge binders before you of exhibits in this case, there's not a single email from Joe Walsh. There's not a supplemental report. There's not a handwritten note. There are no incident reports. There's no reports of any type from Joe Walsh other than the two that I've already described for you, and that his involvement in this case really ended about as quickly as it began.
Let's bring law enforcement expert Vincent Hill back into this conversation. So, Vincent, the police are accused of withholding video from the public here for, what, a year and a half after the shooting. The defense is saying, hey, wait a minute, March is the one who saved the video. The decision to withhold it was somebody further up the chain of command who was worried about institutional liability. It seems like at least a compelling argument for at least something in this trial, maybe not this point, but it sounds compelling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, March is not the guy that releases video to the media. He's not that person, right? That's definitely higher up the chain.
Yeah, they and get some information
yeah, some
officer,
information
some
officer
attorney
somebody
in City
like
Hall,
that.
Something
right.
like that. Yeah.
And that's once it's cleared from higher up, right? But he did make a compelling case. He saved video. Not only from the shooting, but from other cars and from other businesses. He actually collected all the shell casings. He didn't try to hide any. So the defense definitely makes a compelling case to say, how is March conspiring when he inventoried all of the evidence in this case?
So you also have this argument about the word lunge. That sounded compelling as well. You know, who actually said it and how did it wind up attached to some of these reports? This one defense attorney is saying, it's not my guy who said it, so don't pin it on him.
Right, and if he didn't say it in his reports, then again, he's making a huge compelling case because lunge is a very direct word. When you say he lunged at someone, if he did not say that in his report and he inventoried the evidence, the defense has a good case here.
And one of the other defenses here is, well, my guy was barely involved here. And we've heard a couple of different versions of this defense.
Yeah, I mean, for at least from the standpoint of March, he was the detective, right? He was not on the scene. He was not the officer or any of the officers that had the original call to deal with Laquan McDonald. So from that standpoint, yes, he was barely involved in the actual shooting of Laquan McDonald. He was just assigned to investigate it.
Vincent, we'll check in with you at the end of the show here, or in a couple minutes, I should say. The judge in this alleged cop cover-up trial admitted emails from some officers who aren't even on trial in this case. And some observers might consider these messages callous.
Does it? Daniel Gallagher writes to Anthony Wojcik, we are trained to shoot until the threat is eliminated, defeated, or neutralized. Officer did exactly what he was trained to do.
Yes.
Does Daniel Gallagher, from his personal email address to Anthony Wojcik, next write, we should be applauding him, not second-guessing him?
Yes.
Does Daniel Gallagher then write to Anthony Wojcik, threat must be defeated before approaching offender who can then lunge at the officers?
Yes.
Does Daniel Gallagher then write to Anthony Wojcik, offender kept knife in hand entire time, offender never chose to abide by officer's commands. Offender chose his fate, possibly suicide by police.
Yes.
And from there, more emails which do not seem to match the squad car recording, which shows the shooting of Laquan McDonald.
Did Anthony Wojcik to David March write in the conclusion the following? The above two-day investigation determined that Jaquan McDonald was an active assailant who, while armed with a dangerous weapon, used force likely to cause death or serious injury to a private citizen when he attacked and attempted to stab Rudy Brias, threatened the imminent use of force likely to cause death or serious injury when he incised the tire and stabbed the windshield of a CPD vehicle occupied by Officer Thomas Gaffney and initiated imminent use force likely to cause death or serious injury when he initiated an attack on officers Jason Van Dyke and Joseph Walsh?
Yes.
Let's go back to Vincent Hill on this one. So, Vincent, look, that was the state's last witness. It was a key witness because these reports are damaging, but the defense is saying, wait a minute, these aren't even emails among the three defendants in this case.
Right, they're not. And what's important, too, these emails were sent before the public had seen the video, and I assume before these other officers had seen the video, because if it's part of the investigation, you can't just go out and look at this video. So, you know, I say on my podcast all the time, Beyond the Badge, I always tell the public, hey, before you jump to conclusions, wait until all the evidence is out. In this case, I need to say that for police as well, because they're sending out these emails. And yes, shoot until the threat is eliminated, but we didn't see a threat in that dash cam footage.
Yeah, so wait until everything comes out. Look, the judge kept the case alive here, so no granting of the defense motion to dismiss. This case will move along, presumably to a defense case in chief. Although some of the defense might actually spin in the direction of the defense saying the state hasn't proven its case beyond a reasonable doubt. That is where this case is going to pick up when testimony resumes tomorrow. Still ahead tonight on the Daily Debrief, though, an update in the case of a young New England man accused by family members of killing two relatives in order to inherit a fortune. Plus, two criminal charges have been dropped against an attorney-turned-judge made famous in the Netflix film Making a Murderer. Find out why after the break. Everybody, two of three charges have been dropped against a Wisconsin judge accused of stalking his law clerk. Len Kaczynski gained worldwide fame for his representation of accused killer Brendan Dassey. The case became part of the Netflix film Making a Murderer. Kaczynski's law clerk claims his behavior became increasingly bizarre after he suffered from a long illness. Today, the prosecutor in the case dropped two additional accusations against Kaczynski that that Kaczynski violated a restraining order. The prosecutor told us it was just a strategic move. The felony stalking charge is still on the table. We here at the Law and Crime Network are planning to stream the case live starting tomorrow morning. An update tonight in a civil case involving suspicions of double murder involving a family inheritance. Nathan Carman's aunt suspects him of playing a role in the death of his mother, Linda Carman, and his grandfather. Mother Linda Carman disappeared during a Rhode Island boating accident, and the grandfather was shot in the back of the head at close range. A New Hampshire judge will decide this week whether Nathan Carman violated an order by releasing documents related to a different case. Carman's aunts accuse him of violating a protective order by releasing police records that are part of an investigation into his mother Linda's death. The records apparently reveal that Carman's grandfather spoke to a mystery woman the day he died. Those records also relate to an $85,000 insurance policy on the family's boat that the insurance company does not want to pay. President Trump's former national security advisor may not face prison time after his involvement in special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. The heavily blacked out pages of these documents show that Michael Flynn helped prosecutors with two mystery investigations, one of which is criminal. But the documents also say that Michael Flynn is said to have provided timely and substantial help in Mueller's so-called Russia probe involving the president, his campaign, and Russian interference in the 2016 election. The DOJ documents released explain Mueller's recommendation that Flynn receive no jail time for lying to the FBI about his conversations with Russia's U.S. envoy. Flynn briefly served as President Trump's first national security advisor, and he was the first person from the president's inner circle to strike a deal with Mueller's office for a lesser penalty. Flynn pleaded guilty a year ago to lying to the FBI about conversations he had with a Russian ambassador. Now to Anthony Velez with a recap of other newsworthy criminal events.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on LawAndCrime.com and across the country. Authorities in Minnesota released dash cam footage of a high-speed chase through a neighborhood before the evading vehicle crashed into a playground, seriously injuring two children. Troopers tried to pull over 27-year-old Kabar Powell for speeding before he led them on a six-minute pursuit through the Lynn Bohannon neighborhood of North Minneapolis back in June. Powell eventually crashed his vehicle into a playground, injuring three children. Powell now faces multiple counts, including two felony charges of fleeing police. Authorities in North Carolina are now offering a $25,000 reward for information leading to the party responsible for the killing of 13-year-old Hania Noelia Aguilar. Aguilar disappeared on November 5th when she was reportedly forced into an SUV by a suspect outside of her home in Lumberton. Aguilar's body was discovered 10 miles south of her home on November 27th. Authorities have reportedly set up several crime drop boxes in Lumberton with the hopes of generating anonymous tips leading to an arrest. A woman in Chicago filed a $100 million lawsuit against the owners of a Hampton Inn and Suites in New York, claiming a hotel employee secretly recorded her in the shower and then tried blackmailing her. The unidentified plaintiff alleges the incident occurred in 2015 when she stayed at an Albany Hampton Inn and Suites to take the bar exam. A hidden camera reportedly set up in the bathroom of her room captured footage of the victim, which was later uploaded to several pornographic websites. That's when the victim alleges the unidentified hotel employee sent her messages demanding more images as well as money to stop posting the videos to the web. The lawsuit names the Albany Hotel and Hilton Worldwide, the chain's parent company, as defendants, claiming the victim was traumatized by the experience. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for the Daily Debrief.
All right, Vincent Hill, let's talk about this last one here. This takes creepy to an entirely new level.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go check my shower head when I get back to the hotel. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so how does an investigator figure out who did this? Because according to the victim, it was an employee, but how does she know that?
Well, I'm sure she had some suspicions. I mean, who else could it be? But, I mean, there's ways technology-wise you could look at who used a key card to go into that room around that time when she was there. You can start eliminating people that way, who was at work, who wasn't at work.
So discovery will be really interesting in this case. And, of course, then the question of damages. I mean, gosh, we not only have the civil case, there are possible revenge porn ramifications with criminal law. This could go on and on.
Oh, yeah, it can go on for quite some time.
Vincent Hill, we really appreciate your input today on the Daily Debrief. We should do this one again.
Yeah, a pleasure.
All right, and we'll see you, of course, here as a regular host on Law and Crime. The cases we talked about are going to pick up tomorrow. That is the case against the Chicago police officers and also the Len Kaczynski case, planning to kick off tomorrow around 11 o'clock here on the East Coast, 10 o'clock Central. I will see you back here, of course, on the Daily Debrief from 5 to 5:30. Our live coverage begins at 9 a.m. Have a good evening. We'll see you then.